On this episode of The Playbook, I have Thomas Healy, the founder and CEO of Hyliion, and we're going to talk about heavy-duty trucks, car racing, and how can we create negative, I'm talking negative, emissions. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
I have another extraordinary entrepreneur, Thomas Healy. He is the founder and CEO of Hyliion. And it's been a long journey, Tom. Welcome to The Playbook, by the way.
Oh, thanks for having us on. I appreciate it.
You're another one of those guys. I was telling, I did some due diligence, and it's such so much fun because I've admired you from afar. I always pick up on really great entrepreneurs and try to learn lessons. But until I do like full due diligence, you don't get the heart and soul of an entrepreneur. And what you also don't get is the personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions. And you also don't get on the other side, the non-overnight success. You know, a lot of times when you watch the media, it's like, oh yeah, you know, Thomas Healy, overnight success, unbelievable, Hyliion, you know, and then you get down to the nitty gritty going, wait a second, this has been decades of really intellectual and focused work. What, you know, starting off was your big dream? I'm sure it wasn't Hyliion when you started. What, when you were a kid, were you thinking, this is what I'm going to be?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to do a startup. Ultimately, I knew I wanted to kind of create my own journey, my own destiny, and do something that I could build from the ground up. You know, when I was a little kid, after school, I'd actually go to my parents' office. They had a few startups that they created throughout their careers. And, you know, and that's kind of what I grew up with is, you know, going to their offices. My sister and I had our own kind of play area, our own little room in their office. And then we'd go grab dinner afterwards. Right. And so, you know, I just kind of grew up in that kind of startup atmosphere and environment and knew that, you know, that was something I really enjoyed. And, you know, it's thrilling. It's exciting. And when I was in college, that was kind of the first opportunity I took to look at, all right, how would I go create a company on my own? And, you know, as you said, it's not an overnight success and it doesn't happen on your first try either. Right. I mean, I worked on a few different things and some of which were successful, but, you know, then you get into it and you realize maybe you can't scale it like you thought you could. Other ones that you hit roadblocks that it's like, ah, you know, this maybe isn't going to work and let's pivot, let's change. And, you know, ultimately, you know, started Hyliion over 5 years ago now. And it's been a heck of a journey since day one. But the cool thing is it keeps on getting more and more exciting.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting, you meet very few people that do grow up in this entrepreneurial environment. A lot of, you know, that I hear from successful entrepreneurs, I went to law school because my mom wanted me to. And then I went to business school. And then I decided after being on Wall Street for 6 years that I could do something on my own. What was, you know, and there's a lot of people telling you what to do. When you have a family like that, were there other family members, friends, et cetera? Because when you're an entrepreneur, the biggest hurdle that I see is listening to what other people think. But if your parents are entrepreneurial and startup, did you have negative interference from grandparents, aunts, uncles, or friends that were like, don't do what your parents do? This has been the worst road ever.
No. So I was really fortunate on that end. And even when I was in college, right? I mean, the kind of the stereotypical what you're supposed to do is every summer you get a you know, an internship with one of the larger corporations, then you come back to school, your goal is to get a job offer from those groups. And, you know, thankfully my parents were really willing to, you know, not push me down that path and kind of let me, you know, choose what I wanted to go do and go explore. And you know, there was maybe a little bit of hesitation when I told them, you know, when I was two classes away from finishing up my master's program that I was planning on dropping out or taking a leave of absence. It was kind of like, hey, you know, you've already invested this much time and effort. You're planning on, you know, not just getting it across the finish line. But it was at a time when, you know, Hyliion was really booming. We were seeing a bunch of interest in what we were doing. And ultimately, they supported me through it. They, you know, gave me a little pushback on that one, made sure I was making the right decision. But no, I mean, that's what, you know, having great parents is for. They can help you, you know, guide you towards making the right decisions, but not force a decision either.
Right. And I only ask from personal advantage point, because that's obviously the type of parent I am with my four kids. I was curious, how can I get my kids to end up like Tom? So that worked out well. No, you went to an entrepreneurial school, but there's three areas I see that you excel in. One, unlike a lot of entrepreneurs that grow up in these types of environments and are big, big dreamers, you're an implementer. You're a skills person. You spend a lot of time figuring out the skills to figure out what that startup would be. Where did you start that focus as far as that has benefited you for highly on? What skills was it that you wanted to develop when you went to Carnegie Mellon?
Yeah, so when I was looking at colleges, you know, my college search was a little unique because I wanted to play football as well. And so, you know, if you look at, you can either go more playing football and, you know, academics is in the passenger seat, or, you know, Carnegie Mellon was more academics was kind of the driver, and, you know, football was a heck of a lot of fun that you could do on the side. And so, you know, ultimately when I was going to college, I actually looked at, you know, did I want to do engineering or did I want to do a business program? And the advice my parents gave me was, if you can go foster and gain those engineering skills, those can translate over to business. If you go and get a business degree, it would be tough to translate over to, you know, to the engineering side afterwards. And that's ultimately why I started with engineering. And, you know, what was fascinating was you kind of build that strong foundation of knowing how technology works and, you know, what will work, what won't work, and kind of the physics behind it. And then figuring out, you know, when you have that strong kind of knowledge base, then you can see what applies and what's going to work and what isn't before you even kind of get into building something. And that's been one of the fun things with Hylion is, you know, we kind of in the beginning stepped back and looked at, where's the trucking industry going to head in terms of electrification? And, you know, there's a lot of buzz about plug-in electric trucks, a lot of buzz about hydrogen fuel cell trucks, but you often don't hear about the hurdles that are ahead of those as well. And so we tried to look at and said, all right, if we step back and look at the full picture here, look at the pros of electrification, but also the cons, and then try to come up with the best solution. And that's what I think our product really embodies right now. And I think that's one of our key differentiators.
You know, one of the other things is you complement and interlock things extraordinarily well. Like, even it seems like your objectives of the business and your life are all interlocked. What are some of the things that you utilize in what I would call an interlocking strategy, both personally and professionally?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess personal and professional life, I mean, in a lot of ways just tends to mesh together when you're in a startup. I mean, for me, This is a 24/7 endeavor, right? I mean, this isn't a 9-to-5, and nor should it be, right? I mean, we're out here trying to accomplish something that hasn't been done before. And, you know, I think if for those who are looking at going and doing a startup, you need to be willing to commit that time and effort. You need to be willing to miss out on kind of the things in your personal life, just because you're going to be in the office, you're going to be working on moving the company forward. And that works for some people, that doesn't work for all though, right? And you know, from my end, you know, I've tried to structure my life where I can really put as much time and effort towards the company. And, you know, I've had to move from Pittsburgh down to Austin because we saw this as a better location for growing the organization. You know, and ultimately, you know, as for any entrepreneur out there, all the decisions you're making, you need to make sure that it's pushing the company in the right direction, not necessarily just pushing you personally in the right direction.
And to that end too, you're very hyper-focused in your career path, but you've also interlocked the hobbies, the fun. You've always been around cars, racing cars, incorporating football. You know, you and I went to Occidental, you know, it was more academics, but I love football. I wanted to interlock, you know, four more years of being able to do that. And here I see that trend within the context of your life as well. How do you kind of interlock the hobby side, especially racing, into the business?
Yeah. So growing up, motorsports was what I spent every weekend doing. I was at a racetrack somewhere, whether it was driving a go-kart, driving a formula car, sports car, you know, that was my upbringing. But the other side of it, which is not the glitz and the glam of being on the racetrack at the weekend, is the week in between, you're working on the vehicle, you're wrenching on it, you're making it better, you're tearing it down, fixing things. And so, you know, that for me, that kind of gave me those fundamental skills of being able to be hands-on that has become a critical part of Hylion, right? I mean, when it was, you know, five guys and a dog kind of in the beginning here, I mean, everyone was spending the day on a laptop, responding to emails, making phone calls. And then, you know, after hours, we were going to the shop and actually wrenching on the thing. And, you know, and that's been one of the cool things from my end is I kind of had this upbringing in motorsports that let me understand how mechanical parts work and how you can fix them and be hands-on, which has carried forward to you know, being, you know, what we do today, because our business is pretty unique where we've got a bunch of people that are on the engineering side, but we also have a bunch of people who are hands-on with the product, installing it, fixing it, and servicing it. And so, you know, having that background in racing has allowed me to kind of get to see both sides of it. And then the fun thing is it lets you connect with your team, right? I mean, we're a bunch of motorheads here that are ultimately working at Hylion, and, you know, being able to go to car shows together or chat about cars. I mean, that just kind of, you know, lets you build this strong relationship with your employees that, you know, motorsports, you know, if we didn't have motorsports, we maybe wouldn't have those ties.
You know, I've been blessed to be around some great drivers and owners and engineers and mechanics. You know, it takes on its own energy. I'm looking at you, you deal with a lot of heavy duty trucks, and obviously economically, Hylion is positioned in an incredible way because that's where I think the real money in this space is going to be made in deliveries and trucking. And the last mile, no matter what they say, is not going to change for a long time. We still got to get the stuff to the people. You know, no matter how that works, we're going to have to, and then there's an expense to that. How much of your passion did you have to curb to the side, you know, when you kind of get into the bigger mechanisms? You know, it's not the sexiest thing in the world, like a formula car, or, you know, the e-racing league, or green racing league, Lee Steinberg and I were involved with early on, you know, the Sporting Green Alliance. You know, I would have thought that maybe that might have been a distraction to, you know, lead you from what I think is the best positioning for your company.
Yeah. So getting into this, I guess what kind of steered us was looking at where we could have the biggest impact. And, you know, transportation as a whole is the largest polluter globally of GHG emissions. And so that was kind of like the starting point of like, yeah, you know, this is an area to definitely address and go after. And then when you look at trucking, it's this really unique opportunity and one that was personally exciting because it was a challenge, right? I mean, where you've got an industry that has gone through changes, but not significant overhauls. I mean, a diesel truck today, you know, it was diesel trucks back in the 60s, right? I mean, but they've improved a lot, don't get me wrong, but it hasn't gone through a fundamental shift, right? And so, you know, when we looked at it, it was like, okay, we're taking an industry that is super cost conscious, right? I mean, the goal of a trucking fleet is just to get goods from point A to point B as low cost as possible and drive a revenue, drive a profit off of that. And we're going to bring forward this technology that can ultimately have a bunch of savings, but we need to make sure that it's going to work well for the fleet. And, you know, the thing that this was early on in the months or weeks of kind of looking at Hylion and realizing that a truck in 1 year drives about the same number, if not more miles than a normal car will drive in its like whole lifetime, right? Or, you know, with the first owner, a truck will drive between like 100, 120,000 miles every single year. And so when you start like looking at fuel consumption and, you know, how to have an impact, you get this huge multiplier just because these trucks are constantly on the road running and consuming a bunch of fuel. And so that's where we saw it as, you know, hey, this is a great area to go disrupt, because if you can make a disruption happen, it can drive really fast paybacks versus, you know, a hybrid car or an electric car. You know what, you know, I don't think many people go buy a Tesla because they're running the ROI and seeing that it's going to save them money because they're spending less money on fuel, right? That's not the buying decision that happens with a Tesla. But for trucking, that's what they care about. And you know, that's what was exciting to us.
You know, I had the pleasure of once speaking with Elon Musk and, you know, having an old Tesla myself, like a 2012, I still sit in that car and think to myself, God, the vision, because the car still kicks butt technologically in 2020, 8 years of technology. That's like, you know, dog years of normal advancement and change. You know, you're sitting in even a bigger growth spot with more technology being adapted to. Like you said, you go to Cummings down in Columbus, Indiana, you go to their museum. There's been some great advancements, but not like this type of advancements. Where do you see Hylion in the next 10 years? And the only reason I ask is I wish I could have 10 years ago asked Elon Musk where he saw Tesla being 10 years from now. I'd love to know where you see Hylion.
Yeah. So in 10 years, my goal is you're driving down the highway and, you know, a lot of the trucks that you're seeing have our technology in them. And, you know, we're starting to make this shift over to running on much cleaner fuels. You know, one of our unique focuses, just for anyone who's not familiar with our product, is that it is a fully electric semi truck, but we actually use natural gas and more specifically renewable natural gas to actually recharge the batteries as the vehicle's going down the road. So, you know, kind of the pros and cons of this is what we're doing is we're taking the best of electrification, high horsepower, high torque, efficient drivetrain, and tying it to some really, really strong positives of renewable natural gas, which are low cost compared to, you know, even the grid. It's lower cost. And then it also has the potential to have net carbon negative emissions. So that means that not only can you go down to zero from an emissions profile, you can actually go below zero because renewable natural gas is basically a process of capturing emissions, bad emissions, and then using that to drive your truck as opposed to just letting them gas off. So that's from that standpoint, our goal is, you know, you're driving down the highway, you're seeing our powertrains, our trucks, you know, going across the country, and that's becoming the preferred way to move freight. And, you know, I think one of the cool things that we have going for us is, you know, when Elon was starting Tesla, he was kind of starting this whole shift towards electrification as well. He had to get people excited about building the components that were going to go in his vehicle and really convincing people that electrification is the way to go. Now, you know, since that's happened, we're now sitting here today where trucking fleets know electrification is going to happen. You know, you call a fleet and it's like, yeah, we're convinced electric is where we need to head, but we don't know how to get there. We don't know what product's right for us. There aren't products that are on the market yet, right? And so from that standpoint, you know, we kind of have this tailwind of customer interest, and now we just got to be able to start delivering solutions to them to actually meet their needs.
Well, Thomas, you are living proof that entrepreneurs are going to not only save our environment, but save our world. I love the idea of taking bad air and turning it into clean energy with a negative. This is amazing. If people don't realize the power of an entrepreneur and what we can do, you know, education is great, but entrepreneurism and implementation are critical to saving our world and changing our environment. And you're doing that every day at Hylion and with great success. And you're so young, I can't wait to see how many more great things you're gonna do to help us all. Thank you so much for helping me empower so many people with great technology and great leadership.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.